from the secrets we keep to the lies we tell ourselves. Get ready to challenge the status quo and dare to ask the questions others are too afraid to ask. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. Join Francesca as she ignites a meaningful conversation about things that really matter. Buckle up and get real. Now, to give you something to talk about all week long, here's Francesca.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Francesca Luca Show. This is Love Bites After Dark. We have a very, very interesting conversation that we'll be having tonight with Dr. John Hamill. Conversation might challenge what you think you know about domestic violence. It's a topic most people feel is already understood, but the full picture is really more complicated and at times very, very uncomfortable. Men make up a significant portion of victims, and this is a surprise to many people, including in the most extreme cases. Children are affected regardless of who the aggressor is, and in many relationships, the violence isn't just one-sided. So the question is, are we having the right conversation about this? Again, Dr. John Hamill joins me to take a closer look at what the research actually says and where the public narrative may be falling short. Welcome, Dr. Hamill. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
So let's start right with the foundation. When we say domestic violence, what are we actually including in that?
Well, most people think of domestic violence as physical violence between either married couples or cohabitating couples or dating couples. Sometimes the legal definition, depending on what state you're in, the legal definition might also include any violence in the home that might involve cousins or grandparents or elderly abuse or child abuse. But most people, most experts in the field think of domestic violence as violence between intimate adult partners. Mm-hmm. Now, other terms are more precise and they're used by researchers and treatment providers like myself. So the term intimate partner abuse and intimate partner violence are more precise. Intimate partner abuse refers to physical aggression, verbal aggression, emotional abuse, and sexual abuse. And then intimate partner violence specifies that it's physical. Mm-hmm. So those are probably better, more precise terms. But when I use the term domestic violence, I generally mean intimate partner abuse of different types.
Oh, okay. Okay. So how did you get interested in calling out the importance of male victims?
I became a licensed clinical social worker in the early 1990s in the San Francisco Bay Area. I had been working with troubled youth for a few years. I had no particular specific treatment orientation or subject matter that I was interested in. I set up a private practice outside of San Francisco, and the person I was renting office space from at the time was doing groups for men who had been arrested on a domestic violence charge. These are called batterer intervention programs, or BIPs. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he said, John, I'm going to be doing some other kind of work. Would you like to buy my practice? And I said, sure, why not? I knew nothing about domestic violence. I did not grow up in a violent family. Uh-huh. I grew up in the 60s. There was conflict in my family, of course, but there was no domestic violence. So I said, sure. And I got trained in doing groups for men that had been arrested on a domestic violence charge. And at the time, the groups were 16 weeks. Later on, California laws changed. And now the individuals who are convicted of domestic violence as part of their sentence now have to do 52 weeks, which is usually a good thing. Uh-huh. So what happened was I was trained to do these groups in a particular kind of way, heavily political, based on feminist political philosophy.
Oh.
In other words, what I was taught was that these men who are abusive towards their wives are abusive because they want to maintain domination over them because they believe it's their privilege as the male of the household, the man of the house, mm-hmm. to dominate their wives. Mm-hmm. So this is, you know, the patriarchal view of domestic violence. So right. It took me about 1 week of doing these groups to realize that feminist viewpoint was a little bit off. Several months into doing these groups, I started going to local trainings, most of them sponsored by the local battered women shelters. And I got the same kind of feedback that, you know, these guys, they're all controllers. They all want to dominate their wives and they're all going to lie to you. So don't let them fool you. And I'm saying, well, wait a minute, I'm talking to these guys in group. Some of them obviously are misleading me. Some of them obviously are blaming the victim. Mm-hmm. Some of them clearly want to dominate their wives. But most of them actually aren't like that. They have anger problems. They don't know how to communicate. They have poor self-esteem. Some of them are actually involved in relationships where their partner is just as abusive or more so than they are.
Doesn't surprise me.
So, again, I'm not saying that none of these guys were misogynistic and that none of these guys wanted to dominate. But I got really frustrated because every time I went to a training, I would just be met with a lot of resistance. Like, I would be treated like I'm some kind of an idiot. Mm-hmm. I'm a licensed therapist. My profession demands that I uphold professional standards in terms of proper treatment based on a proper assessment of the problem. This led me to do independent research. At the time, I was going to John F. Kennedy College near San Francisco. I was going to UC Berkeley, not as a student, but just going into their libraries and looking up through the stacks of social science journals for information about domestic violence. And eventually, one thing led to another. I started to do original research. I started to publish. I've now published more than 50 peer-reviewed journal articles on the topic. And my initial hunch about the kind of clients I was dealing with and what they needed turned out to be correct. So today, the treatment model that I use and that I teach is based on the research. Mm-hmm. It's not based on any particular philosophy. Just for the record, I'm a staunch second wave feminist. In other words, I believe mm-hmm. women should have equal opportunities. Mm-hmm. I'm actually quite liberal politically. But the problem with assuming that all men are motivated to dominate and control is that it's not true. Second of all, it can lead to men getting arrested on false premises. Three, it also can lead to these men not getting the proper treatment. So, for example, a man who's not particularly controlling or patriarchal, but who's defensive and has dependency traits, and in fact may actually be afraid of his wife or feel like he can't handle conversations where she's running circles around him verbally and lashes out, is a different kind of guy than the one that goes to the local bar to drag her out by the hair because he thinks she's hanging out with some guys and she's going to have sex with him. That's what I'm saying. I have worked and consulted with like men's rights activists, but I'm not an activist. I'm a therapist. And I'm interested in helping individuals overcome their issues. I've probably done more for battered women than majority of workers in shelters because I've probably helped several thousand men over the last 30 years to overcome their violence, which helps reduce violence in the home. But by looking at men as only one part of the problem, you know, in other words, if domestic violence is only perpetrated by men and women are innocent victims, first of all, that's just not true.
Right.
Women are just as violent as men. Although they don't generally cause the same amount of physical damage. If we continue to believe this myth that only men are violent and that when women are violent in self-defense, then here's the problem. First of all, we're not really helping these guys because they're going to resist treatment if they don't feel like you're on their side, if you don't feel like you're actually getting what they're saying, if you're not helping them, say, with their anger problems and you're calling them chauvinists or women beaters. You may lose them and not be able to really help them. Second of all, you're not really helping the families because if the mothers are also violent or if they're part of the cycle of violence in some kind of way, the children are affected. So nobody wins.
Right.
The only people that win are the political feminists who are scoring political points.
Right. I'm so glad that you've brought this to light. It was several years ago, a really dear friend of mine, her nephew got into some trouble with a girl. He was, I think they were in their 20s or something. I don't remember. It was quite some time ago. But I believe they lived together. And my understanding, I've only met him a couple times, but my understanding is he did have some anger issues. He did have a bit of a bad temper. But what this girl ended up turning this into was just a horrible, horrible situation. And, you know, she just really flipped the entire narrative. This much I could see. And it ended up costing my friends quite a bit of money to get him out of the mess that my understanding is that this young woman had gotten him into. And I believe that is true. I think that he didn't have to end up going to jail. But what a horrible thing that would have been because he was innocent. Other than the fact that he did obviously have these anger issues, he did have to take an anger management class. And I suppose that's certainly better than going to jail, but it's got to have weighed heavy on this kid's mind that he was accused of such violence that just was not true. So, you know, this isn't the first time I've heard this. So it's really, I'm so glad again that you're bringing this to light because I think, you know, even, and you know, and here I am, and I'm a host, I talk to a lot of people, you know, I learn so much. And yet even in my mind, when we talk about domestic violence, the first thing you think about is, a guy hurting a woman on some level. And of course, the domestic violence just encompasses so much more, like you said. I mean, there could be, you know, domestic violence in the home with the parents, the kids, but that part about women can be violent as well. And when I read that 39%, that's pretty significant.
What are you referring to? That's a pretty big number.
It's just that 39% of men can be victims of domestic violence, including severe lethal violence, which represents 39% of domestic.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
So that's pretty significant. And I think a lot of people just don't know this. And I mean, of course, there's, you know, it's multi, you know, layered, I'm quite certain. But it's good to bring that out and to let people know that it isn't just about men, you know, like you said, dragging the girlfriend or the wife out of the bar, pulling her by the hair or whatnot. Anyway, we're going to take a short break, Dr. Hamel. And when we come back, I'd like to know how much of it is actually physical versus psychological, or if it's a little, you know, how that kind of plays out. So listeners, stay with us here. More to come.
Upgrade your glass without draining your wallet at Empire Wine and Spirits. Big flavor, small price. Don't miss the four to go. Four wines for just $44.95. That's 40% off the regular price. More taste, less waste, and a deal that's hard to beat. They've got a massive wine selection, a huge lineup of craft beers, and all the spirits you need for any night of the week. Every Friday from 3:30 to 6:30, stop in for their wine tasting. Sip, sample, and find your new favorite. Empire Wine and Spirits, conveniently located at 182 Summer Street in Kingston. Or visit EmpireWineAndSpirits.com.
Ready to feel confident, seen, and absolutely unstoppable? At Lydia LeClaire Photography, they capture families, couples, high school seniors, and even your pets with natural, joy-filled images you'll love forever. And now Lydia is looking for 40 incredible women over 40 for a one-of-a-kind portrait experience. You'll get professional hair and makeup, a fully guided photo shoot, a stunning fine art portrait, and you'll be featured in a special exhibition celebrating you. Spots are limited and they're going fast. This isn't just a photo shoot. It's your moment. To learn more, visit LydiaLeClairePhotography.com. You'll be glad you did. Musty smell in your attic or basement? Mold can spread fast and affect the air your family breathes. Behold No Mold from Mold Remediation offers same-day mold removal service for attics, basements, and residential homes. Fast response, thorough treatment, guaranteed results. Their trained professionals remove mold safely and efficiently, helping protect your home and your family. Don't let mold take over your home. Call now for same-day mold removal service. Fast, thorough, guaranteed results. Visit BeholdNoMold.com or call Paul Tavares today at 508-942-5794. Don't waste another minute. You'll be glad you did. And mention this ad and get 10% off. When it comes to selling your home, first impressions don't just matter, they close deals. Meet Brenda Hernandez, owner, staging designer, and the creative force behind Designs by Her. Whether your home is vacant or occupied, Brenda transforms every space into an irresistible, buyer-ready experience. Her meticulous eye for design creates spaces buyers don't just see, they feel. The result? The majority of her stage homes go under contract in 30 days or less. Thoughtful design, powerful results. That's the difference. Call Brenda today at 774-888-8571 or visit designsbyher.net. You'll be glad you did. All right, we are back, and you are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. This is Love Bites After Dark, and I'm speaking with Dr. John Hamel. Welcome back, Dr. Hamel. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Sure.
Before the break, I had asked, just in case someone was just tuning in, that how much of this is actually physical versus psychological or coercive?
Well, let me break it down with some basic statistics. So the largest, most recent national survey of domestic violence finds that about 7 million adult women and about 7 million adult men will say that they've been physically assaulted by their partner at least once in the past year. So 7 million women, 7 million men on average have been physically attacked by their partner in the last year. Now, by physical aggression, we can mean anything from being pushed or grabbed or slapped all the way to being stabbed and beaten up, right?
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Other research finds that the majority, well over 50% of these physical acts involve lower level, non-injurious types of behaviors, grabbing, shoving, that kind of thing. There's a small subset of domestic violence, somewhere around 20%, maybe a little bit more, that is more serious, that may involve scratching, punching, choking, that can lead to injuries. All right. And if you're asking what's the difference in terms of men and women, men are more likely to beat up their partners in the sense that they're able to repeatedly subdue their partners because men are generally bigger and stronger. Women tend to slap more, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some differences in terms of the specific acts. Now, you ask about emotional abuse. Verbal abuse, emotional abuse, jealous and possessive behaviors, threats, stalking, those kind of things are also equally perpetrated by men and women. And there's not a lot of difference between the tactics that men and women use. There's some differences, but for the most part, women are just as jealous, just as threatening, just as messed up mm-hmm. as men when it comes to relationships.
Dear, I say this as a woman, but sometimes I think that women can be even more jealous and possessive, but her listeners don't shoot me.
Well, these are the facts. Now, are women more jealous? No, they're not more jealous. They're not more emotional in that sense. There's a lot of stereotypes about women that feminists complain about that it's true. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, you know, she's on her period, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Yes, women tend to experience and express emotions in a different way than men, and that's often for the good. You know, are women crazier or more abusive? No. But the point I'm trying to make is that they're certainly not significantly less abusive emotionally or physically than men. But here's the main difference, and this is the reason why it's hard sometimes to get your average person to think about these things in an honest way. The vast majority of violence outside the home is perpetrated by men. And men commit the vast majority of felonious assaults. It's just a fact that men in general are physically more aggressive than women.
Right. Okay? Right.
But in the home, it's different. It's not only different in the United States, but in most countries in the world, because women view the home as their domain traditionally. So they have more of an interest in maintaining some control over their domain. I can go into a lot of speculation around why the rates are so close across the sexes in the home versus outside the home, but that's one explanation. A couple of more things I could say is, 39% of intimate partner homicide victims are male and 61% are female. Furthermore, those women who kill their partners are not, for the most part, acting in self-defense and are not, for the most part, responding to a history of violence. Some of them are, obviously. I've worked with several murder cases where the woman killed her partner after years and years of abuse. There is such a thing as a battered woman. Mm-hmm. There is such a thing as a battered woman syndrome. Although scientifically it has problems, but nonetheless, there are women who respond to, after years of violence, they finally respond by killing their partners. However, there are far more women who kill their partners either for the money or out of vengeance or as a natural escalation of conflicts in a relationship or because of drug use or because they're just tired of being in a relationship and they have a new boyfriend and they want to get rid of the guy.
Oh, gosh.
There's all kinds.
That sounds so crazy, though, doesn't it? They have a new boyfriend, so they're gonna so let me kill you because I've got a new boyfriend. Yeah, that sounds really logical.
Yeah, so what I'm saying is that women clearly are more vulnerable to violence. They suffer the majority of serious injuries. They're more likely to have to go to the hospital. Mm-hmm. They're more likely to need shelter. They're more likely to be killed. But it's a matter of degree. And there are lots of men that are severely abused, who are killed, who are controlled, who are abused. And if we don't focus on men as victims, we're not going to reduce rates of domestic violence in our communities in an expeditious way. We're only going to solve part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to just go back for a second because you mentioned the battered women syndrome. Can you give our listeners an explanation of what that exactly is?
So I've criticized the battered women syndrome over the years and so have other researchers. But originally, there's a psychologist by the name of Lenore Walker who worked in the 1970s and 80s in, I believe, in New York City, was a therapist who was seeing a lot of women who had been abused by their partners. And she took it upon herself to do some research about these women and found that many of them just felt really helpless in the relationship. These men were not only physically abusive to these women, but also highly controlling. Okay. Mm-hmm. She wrote a book, The Battered Woman, where she postulated that these women were afflicted with something called learned helplessness. In other words, they were so helpless that they just couldn't leave the relationship. The women would go through a particular cycle, a three-phase cycle. What they would experience would be the husband or boyfriend over a period of time getting more and more agitated with them, finally blowing up at them, hurting them, and then apologizing and feeling really bad later. And then a three-phase cycle would start all over again. Now, what research has shown since Lenore Walker published her book is that about 50% of women who go to shelters and who talk about being severely abused actually go through that three-phase cycle. But the other 50% don't. They don't go through the whole cycle. And the reason for that is because there are different kinds of batterers. Some men do have a buildup of anger and tension and then act out and then feel sorry afterwards. And then there are some men, the ones who are antisocial, the sociopaths, who just lash out and they don't have any, they don't feel bad about it afterwards to any degree. So there are a lot of problems with the theory, but the idea that women and men who are victims of severe violence and severe chronic controlling types of behaviors, that they experience trauma symptoms and are affected by it, and that it could affect their judgment and how they might respond to that violence, that's true. So when I go to court on behalf of a client that's been accused of intimate partner violence, including homicide, I'm taking into account the extent to which they really do have PTSD as a result of the abuse. If a woman, for example, is constantly degraded and been severely attacked and she's fear of her partner and he shows up one day and corners her and has a menacing look that she's seen 100 times before that preceded him hitting her. And in that moment, in her mind, she feels that she's in danger and she grabs a knife and stabs him. That's your classic battered woman scenario. Is she a stone cold killer? No. Is she acting purely in self-defense? Well, if he didn't hit her and she just thought he was going to hit her based on the past, you know, the prosecution can make the case that, well, she could have just laughed or called the police. Why did she have to stab him? So those are the types of situations where I say, well, look, perhaps a reduced sentence might be in order because let's take into account her experience. And by the way, everything we're saying about these female victims applies to male victims, right?
Of course.
Yeah. So there is such a thing as a battered person syndrome. The problem is that lots of women, as you can imagine, who killed their partners, claim to be battered women, and they're not. They're not battered. Or they were involved in a mutually abusive relationship where both partners were abusive, and one day, you know, they decided to off their husband. So there's no battered person syndrome. There's no self-defense. I can't tell you the exact percentages, but I can tell you that most battered women are not reacting purely in self-defense. And most of them are not reacting, strictly speaking, to years and years of severe abuse. Some of them are reacting to high conflict and various forms of non-lethal violence. But we don't know enough about these couples to really say exactly what goes on behind closed doors. And the reason I'm saying that is because after an individual kills their partner, the partner's not around to be asked about their experiences, right? So you're getting information from the killer and the killer's friends and family. So of course, they're going to have a reporting bias.
So in most domestic violence relationships, the violence, are you saying, is mostly mutual?
Well, there's a difference between, the term I use is bilateral or bidirectional. Mutual implies that it's the same. About 60 to 70% of relationships where there's any kind of physical aggression, both partners are engaging in it. And of the remaining like 40%, about 20% is perpetrated only by the woman and about 20% is perpetrated only by the man. If you're asking, well, if it's bidirectional, does it mean that it's equal? Well, not necessarily, because if a woman slaps her husband and shoves her down the stairs and she breaks her neck, you know, you can't say that that's mutual. It's bidirectional. Women do get the worst of it, right? So it gets complicated. You were right, Francesca, earlier when you said it's a, you know, this is multi-layered. It really is, because there are all kinds of motives for why people are violent. People who are violent have all kinds of personality traits. Some of them really are dangerous. Some of them are not. Some of them are really amenable to couples counseling. Some of them should never be doing couples counseling. They should be locked up. So it depends.
I'm always curious how it ends up that people end up in these relationships in the first place. Now, I know, or I think my understanding would be that if you've come from a violent past, an abusive past, you're, you know, that whole expression, that which you resist persists, that, you know, if you had an abusive father, a woman might go after an abusive man, vice versa. Maybe a man who had, you know, an abusive mother may go after an abusive woman, but I'm always curious how they not only get there, but why it is so darn difficult to get out. Now, I say that and knowing that obviously there are children involved, maybe there's financial issues. I mean, there's many reasons that people stay together, but oftentimes my understanding is they stay together because there is that bond there, that crazy making bond. And, you know, which leads me to wonder how this domestic violence really affects families, kids. Yeah. How does it affect them? And it's so that's another big question with, I'm sure, many layers. But I'd be curious about that. But we are going to take another short break. When we come back, I would love you to tackle that question. So listeners, stay with us here. We will be right back. Musty smell in your attic or basement? Mold can spread fast and affect the air your family breathes. Behold No Mold from Mold Remediation offers same-day mold removal service for attics, basements, and residential homes. Fast response, thorough treatment, guaranteed results. Their trained professionals remove mold safely and efficiently, helping protect your home and your family. Don't let mold take over your home. Call now for same-day mold removal service. Fast, thorough, guaranteed results. Visit BeholdNoMold.com or call Paul Tavares today at 508-942-5794. Don't waste another minute. You'll be glad you did. And mention this ad and get 10% off. So your car's acting up again, huh? Squeaky brakes, weird noises, or that it's gonna quit on me vibe? Don't stress. Meineke has your back with locations in both Weymouth and Quincy. They'll fix it fast, keep it honest, and get you back on the road before your coffee even gets cold. Oil changes, tires, brakes, you name it, they do it. So stop stressing, start cruising, and leave the car drama to Meineke. Fast, friendly, and reliable. Meineke gets you back on the road in no time. For all your car care needs, trust Meineke. With two convenient locations in Quincy and Weymouth, stop by or call to make an appointment today. You'll be glad you did. When it comes to selling your home, first impressions don't just matter, they close deals. Meet Brenda Hernandez, owner, staging designer, and the creative force behind Designs by Her. Whether your home is vacant or occupied, Brenda transforms every space into an irresistible, buyer-ready experience. Her meticulous eye for design creates spaces buyers don't just see, they feel. The result? The majority of her stage homes go under contract in 30 days or less. Thoughtful design, powerful results. That's the difference. Call Brenda today at 774-888-8571 or visit designsbyher.net. You'll be glad you did.
Upgrade your glass without draining your wallet at Empire Wine and Spirits. Big flavor, small price. Don't miss the four to go. Four wines for just $44.95. That's 40% off the regular price. More taste, less waste, and a deal that's hard to beat. They've got a massive wine selection, a huge lineup of craft beers, and all the spirits you need for any night of the week. Every Friday from 3:30 to 6:30, stop in for their wine tasting. Sip, sample, and find your new favorite. Empire Wine and Spirits, conveniently located at 182 Summer Street in Kingston. Or visit EmpireWineAndSpirits.com.
All right, we are back and you are listening to the Francesca Luca Show. This is Love Bites After Dark and we are talking about domestic violence and I am speaking with Dr. John Hummel. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Yep, glad to be here.
So before the break, I had asked you about how this all plays out with, well, I was going to say non-victims, but they really are victims, aren't they? Even, you know, like the children, they become victims of seeing this and then thinking, and then that becomes the model that they see and that they would then look for in their own relationships as these kids mature. Would you say that's accurate? Am I on the right track?
No, absolutely. That's the reason why when couples get divorced, if one partner alleges that they've been subjected to domestic violence, the courts are going to want to look into that very carefully, because if a child should not be around a parent, that's been violent towards the other parent, even if the partner or the parent has not been abusive directly to the child, because when children witness violence, they learn from that. They can become violent themselves. One thing that's really important to know is that the research is quite clear on this. It doesn't matter whether the children witness mom or dad being violent. They learn either way because you say of course because it sounds like you're a reasonable person, but
It depends who you ask, but anyway.
the thrill of domestic violence, especially when it comes to victims' advocates and some of the people in the legal system, are very political. And sometimes that keeps them from being open to the research. But there is something called observational learning. And so what that means is that when a child sees role models acting in certain ways, sometimes behaving really badly, they internalize that. And later on in life, when they're in a situation where there's conflict with their own partners, as teenagers or adults, they unconsciously draw on those experiences that they saw their parents engage in.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, your subconscious mind, right, controls, 95% of the way you live? Isn't that right?
Well, I don't know about the percentages, but it's true. Now, I can also say that violence by dads are scarier. So when children see their dad go off, just on average, they're more likely to suffer anxiety and depression and symptoms like that. So in the short run, in general, dad's violence is scarier to kids. But in the long run, they learned the same things by witnessing mom being violent. And as we know, women's violence can be quite scary. If you saw the movie Mommy Dearest, you have to think about that.
That's right. Exactly. I mean, that was crazy.
And by the way, I just wanted to just say something before I forget.
Sure.
A lot of times over the years when I've given talks, I've gotten feedback from colleagues and attendees at conferences that I've attended who've said, John, it's not the same men and women. You put a man and a woman in a boxing ring and the man is on average going to win every time. So don't tell me that women are just as violent as men. And my response to that is, well, I don't know anyone who has a boxing ring in their home. Okay. You're using a metaphor that you think is accurate, but actually doesn't make any sense if you really know the research.
Right.
And here's why it doesn't make any sense. There are reasons why men, just the average guy, doesn't just beat up his wife every time she nags him. Because men in general aren't violent. Men in general want peace, just like women in general aren't violent. They want to negotiate. They want to resolve things. Sure, men and women can be obnoxious and annoying, and they want what they want, and they don't listen really well. We call that dirty fighting. They bring up the past. They blame each other. All those things. Okay, that's normal fighting. But most people don't want to hurt their partners. So what would lead a man or a woman to be violent? Yes, Francesca, it's true that if you observe your parents growing up, that is a risk factor. For sure, for becoming violent later in life. But there are other risk factors. Alcohol abuse, drug use, being stressed out, being unemployed, not being able to pay the bills, which leads to conflict, which can lead to violence. Your personality type. Some people have a more aggressive personality. Whether or not they grew up in an abusive family, it may just be their genetic makeup. They have a quick trigger. There's all kinds of reasons why people act out, but most men don't want to hurt their partners. Furthermore, at least in our society, men are taught that it's not okay to hit women. It's not a Most men don't approve of other men hitting women. It's just not okay.
No.
So
that's right.
All right. Yeah. And women know this. Women know this, and they know that they can get away with violence, and they know that the police are going to more likely listen to their story than the man. So there are all kinds of strategic factors at play in the dynamics of domestic violence between men and women. And also, by the way, between men and men or women and women in same-sex relationships, it's the same dynamics that men restrain themselves for cultural reasons, and women take advantage of that for their own reasons. So that kind of levels the playing field a little bit. But having said that, you know, a woman in a relationship where both partners just lose their cool from time to time and they just start swinging, just everything else being equal, the woman is more at risk of being hurt. But here's the thing, from the point of view of someone like myself that's interested in the whole system, making sure the kids are safe, that the kids don't observe the violence, making sure that whoever is being hurt the most, more in danger, should be getting shelter services. I'm also interested in making sure that the perpetrator is getting help. Every piece of the system needs to be attended to. So it's not inconsistent to suggest in a particular case that mom is getting the brunt of the violence and she really needs to be in a shelter away from dad for a certain amount of time. Dad may need to be, he may need to be prosecuted for this and ordered to do a program. But at the same time, the couple may want to stay together and there may be a good reason to work with them as a couple. And there may be good reason to, even if they split up, to allow dad to have visits with the kids, even if he was posing a danger to mom. Every case is different, Francesca.
Of course. So why hasn't this been more central to the public conversation?
Well, I think that, let me just say that the average person out there, the average adult knows somebody, they've met somebody, there's somebody in their family or a friend told them about some husband that was unfairly accused or whose wife was just impossible, who was ruining his life. We all know this. We all know this. It's just a fact. But unfortunately, amongst battered women's advocates, it's not as bad these days, but for many, many years, many decades, among the professional class, it's just not okay to talk about male victims. And the reason for it is very simple. When the battered women's shelter movement began in the late 70s and 80s, it started as a grassroots movement in England and the US, but it was soon pretty much co-opted by political feminist organizations because they had the money and they had the attorneys. Hmm. And they were the ones that were right. able to get laws passed to protect victims of domestic violence. So in some respects, it was good that the grassroots advocates hooked up with the political feminists. On the other hand, it had consequences that we're still living with today. It politicized it. Feminists were interested in advancing the rights of women, and they considered battered women to be part of their cause. As early as the 1980s, there were researchers throughout the United States that were looking at the research and saying, hey, hold on a second. It's not just patriarchy. It's not just misogyny that drives men and women to be violent. There's other factors. And by the way, these abusive women need to be dealt with. But because the battered women's movement was co-opted by basically the politicians and politicized groups, they determine public policy, and we're still kind of living with it today. The other thing I want to say is that they believe the shelter workers, the shelter directors primarily, and the political feminists, they believe really strongly that if we pay any attention to male victims, it will take away from the real task, which is to help women, that it will somehow enable men to get away with their violence, that it will give the message that men aren't really violent, it's all those crazy women who are PMS. Saying. And so my response to that is to say, well, can't you just trust the experts like myself, the therapists who studied it to know what we're doing, that we can tell if a guy's lying and blaming the victim. We have tools to figure that out. Don't just make a blanket determination that anytime a man complains about his wife being violent, he must be blaming the victim. You know, why don't you explore the possibility that maybe he's telling the truth, right?
Right. Dr. Hemel, we're going to take our last break before we go into the last segment. But when we come back, I'd love to know, how has public policy on domestic violence evolved over the years? Or I don't know if that's too big a question, but when we come back, you can marinate on that during the break. And when we come back, hopefully we can answer that for our listeners. Listeners, stay with us here. We will be right back. For 25 years, Andora Salon has been making the South Shore feel beautiful. And today, it's also your destination for stylish women's fashion. I know because I wouldn't go anywhere else. Andora is where I always feel my most beautiful. Discover a curated boutique filled with flattering, easy-to-wear pieces you'll love reaching for again and again. From casual chic to something a little more special, Andora makes getting dressed feel effortless and fun. And when you're ready to complete the look, their experienced team offers expert hair and makeup services personalized just for you, all in one relaxing, welcoming space. Located at 82 Main Street in Kingston, Andora delivers an elevated fashion and beauty experience designed to help you feel comfortable, confident, and completely yourself. Visit AndoraSalon.com today. That's AANDORA Salon, and be on your way to a new you. Shop the boutique, refresh your style, love the way you look. You'll be glad you did.
Upgrade your glass without draining your wallet at Empire Wine and Spirits. Big flavor, small price. Don't miss the four to go. Four wines for just $44.95. That's 40% off the regular price. More taste, less waste, and a deal that's hard to beat. They've got a massive wine selection, a huge lineup of craft beers, and all the spirits you need for any night of the week. Every Friday from 3:30 to 6:30, stop in for their wine tasting. Sip, sample, and find your new favorite. Empire Wine and Spirits, conveniently located at 182 Summer Street in Kingston. Or visit EmpireWineAndSpirits.com.
Ready to feel confident, seen, and absolutely unstoppable? At Lydia LeClaire Photography, they capture families, couples, high school seniors, and even your pets with natural, joy-filled images you'll love forever. And now Lydia is looking for 40 incredible women over 40 for a one-of-a-kind portrait experience. You'll get professional hair and makeup, a fully guided photo shoot, a stunning fine art portrait, and you'll be featured in a special exhibition celebrating you. spots are limited and they're going fast. This isn't just a photo shoot. It's your moment. To learn more, visit LydiaLeClairePhotography.com. You'll be glad you did. When it comes to selling your home, first impressions don't just matter, they close deals. Meet Brenda Hernandez, owner, staging designer, and the creative force behind Designs by Her. Whether your home is vacant or occupied, Brenda transforms every space into an irresistible, buyer-ready experience. Her meticulous eye for design creates spaces buyers don't just see, they feel. The result? The majority of her stage homes go under contract in 30 days or less. Thoughtful design, powerful results. That's the difference. Call Brenda today at 774-888-8571 or visit designsbyher.net. You'll be glad you did. All right, we are back. Welcome back, Dr. Hemmel. So before the break, I had asked you, how has public policy on domestic violence evolved over the years? And I don't know if that's too big of a question or whether maybe you can give us a Reader's Digest version of that.
Right. I'll have to give you the Reader's Digest version. All right. So I think I've touched on it a little bit. Back in the 70s, up until the 1980s and into the 90s, if someone called the police and it because their partner was being violent, and most of the time it was a woman, the police would show up and they might arrest the man or they might not. A lot of police departments were trained in conflict resolution and wanted to sort of, you know, let the couple work it out rather than arrest. Police also didn't like to show up at these domestic violence calls because it was dangerous for them, because sometimes one or both partners would take their anger out on the cop and it would get difficult. So, but a lot of women who had been abused for a long time and called the police and weren't getting there were a lot of these women, and some of them, you know, wound up getting attorneys and going to national organizations for women, the National Organization for Women Now and other organizations, and eventually leading to lawsuits. And that was a good thing because it led state legislatures around the country to enact tough laws on domestic violence. One of the things that happened was that police were no longer given a lot of discretion to arrest based on what they thought the situation needed. They were told, if it looks like someone's in danger, you need to arrest. So these are called mandatory arrest policies. Most states have mandatory arrest policies, but even the ones that don't, the police are much more savvy these days about determining if somebody's in danger. So more and more people are getting arrested, all right? So back in the 80s and into the 90s, most men who were arrested were more the chronic type of bad. Your typical batterer really mm-hmm. posed a threat. Mm-hmm. But with these mandatory arrest laws, over the years, I've seen in my own practice far more men now who are referred and women who pose far less of a threat. In California, if the neighbors hear an argument and they call the police and the police show up, let's say the woman says, you know, he's hitting me, and he says, you know, I didn't. The police are likely to just arrest unless they think that the man is giving a good explanation. If there's no injuries, they might not arrest. But usually, even without injuries, they're likely to arrest. And the research shows that the police are likely to err on the side of arresting the man, even without any strong evidence. That can be explained in different ways, but one of the explanations, and it's just inevitable, it's that it's just prejudice. I've had police officers actually tell me, you know, I don't know who to arrest. I just arrest the guy because I figured the guy is scarier and he causes more damage. So there definitely is a gender bias when it comes to arrest. Mm-hmm. I also want to say, however, that sometimes the police will arrest the woman unfairly who happens to be the victim if she is giving the police a hard time. Let's say a woman is a real victim of domestic violence. She calls the police and, you know, they show up an hour later. And when they show up, she comes out and she'd been drinking and she's yelling at the cops and they arrest her. Actually, she was the victim, right? So there's all kinds of scenarios where the wrong person is arrested. But in general, the police are more likely to err on the side of arresting men, whether or not they really were the perpetrator. Here's the problem. If a man is arrested and either he was falsely arrested or he was arrested for maybe grabbing her one time in a marriage that really hasn't had a lot of violence, it's extremely disruptive to the family. It's extremely costly, right? The guy is just on his record. It might keep him from getting a job. The wife or the girlfriend may not want any of this. In fact, a lot of the reforms that have been suggested and carried out to rectify these policies have been initiated by women, by victims who have said, listen, you know, I called the police because I thought they would mediate the problem. I didn't expect that my husband would go to jail.
Right. Exactly.
So that's gotten better, I think, over the years, a little bit better. There's been reform proposals that maybe dial back the mandatory arrest policies a little bit, allowing prosecutors, for example, to negotiate some kind of a deal prior to sentencing, a pre-sentencing deal in cases of lower level domestic violence. Perhaps the man or the woman defendant agrees to go into a program, but there's nothing on the record. And that would be only in cases where it's really safe to do so. The approach to treatment as far as group counseling that I was trained in, it's called the Duluth model, no longer dominates all the treatment models in the United States. There are psychological models, models based on cognitive behavioral therapy and so forth. So there's been a lot of reforms, a lot of changes, but nonetheless, domestic violence is still not really well understood. The judicial system takes a heavy hand to it. In the family court system, it's a whole separate discussion, but too often, perfectly good parents, usually dads, lose custody of their kids based on unfounded or exaggerated allegations. So this is something I deal with on a regular basis.
That's tragic. Yeah. Yeah. We're just winding down now, but for people listening who worry that this line of discussion could discourage victims from coming forward, how would you respond to that kind of a concern?
I would say if you're a victim, contact your local battered women's shelter or call a crisis hotline and reach out.
Interesting that you said a woman's shelter.
Well, there aren't men's shelters. There aren't any men's shelters. There's, as far as I know, there's
three. I didn't even know that.
Oh, no, there's three shelters in the United States, as far as I know, that accept men at all. One is in Southern California. So if you're talking about men, where can men go to get help? Yeah, call your local shelter. And, you know, if you're a guy, you might get some resistance. Possibly they might ask embarrassing questions that might suggest that you're the culprit. But, you know, do it anyway, because it matters. Because if you don't call the police on your partner and you've been abused, and you don't seek help, not only is that not good for the kids to see their mom being violent, but also it may work against you if you ever get divorced and, you know, the tables are turned on you. So one more thing I want to say, Francesca, is...
I was just going to say, is there anything before we finish up here that you'd like to share with our listening audience before we say goodbye?
Yeah, well, I'm throwing out a lot of information at the audience here. If anybody's interested in learning more about the facts of domestic violence, there's a website that you might want to go to. It's domesticviolenceresearch.org. Just one word, domesticviolenceresearch.org. We're updating this research base. It's the largest research base of domestic violence information anywhere in the world. It's free to anyone who wants to access it.
Well, you're doing great work. So I thank you, Dr. Hamel, for sharing all your knowledge with our listeners. I'm sure that they appreciate it. I know I do. So again, thanks so much for being on the show tonight.
You're welcome.
All right, you take care.
Thank you.
All right, we've got to wrap things up and say goodnight. If you missed part of the show, you can go right on over to my iTunes page and listen there. If you know someone who is a victim of domestic violence, certainly I would love it if you would share the show with them, and we will see you next time. Make it a great week.
Upgrade your glass without draining your wallet at Empire Wine and Spirits. Big flavor, small price. Don't miss the four to go. Four wines for just $44.95. That's 40% off the regular price. More taste, less waste, and a deal that's hard to beat. They've got a massive wine selection, a huge lineup of craft beers, and all the spirits you need for any night of the week. Every Friday from 3:30 to 6:30, stop in for their wine tasting. Sip, sample, and find your new favorite. Empire Wine and Spirits, conveniently located at 182 Summer Street in Kingston. Or visit EmpireWineAndSpirits.com.
So your car's acting up again, huh? Squeaky brakes, weird noises, or that it's gonna quit on me vibe? Don't stress. Meineke has your back with locations in both Weymouth and Quincy. They'll fix it fast, keep it honest, and get you back on the road before your coffee even gets cold. Oil changes, tires, brakes, you name it, they do it. So stop stressing, start cruising, and leave the car drama to Meineke. Fast, friendly, and reliable. Meineke gets you back on the road in no time. For all your car care needs, trust Meineke. With two convenient locations in Quincy and Weymouth, stop by or call to make an appointment today. You'll be glad you did.
musty smell in your attic or basement, mold can spread fast and affect the air your family breathes. Behold No Mold from Mold Remediation offers same-day mold removal service for attics, basements, and residential homes. Fast response, thorough treatment, guaranteed results. Their trained professionals remove mold safely and efficiently, helping protect your home and your family. Don't let mold take over your home. Call now for same-day mold removal service. Fast, thorough, guaranteed results. Visit BeholdNoMold.com or call Paul Tavares today at 508-942-5794. Don't waste another minute. You'll be glad you did. And mention this ad and get 10% off. Ready to feel confident, seen, and absolutely unstoppable? At Lydia LeClaire Photography, they capture families, couples, high school seniors, and even your pets with natural, joy-filled images you'll love forever. And now, Lydia is looking for 40 incredible women over 40 for a one-of-a-kind portrait experience. You'll get professional hair and makeup, a fully guided photo shoot, a stunning fine art portrait, and you'll be featured in a special exhibition celebrating you. Spots are limited and they're going fast. This isn't just a photo shoot, it's your moment. To learn more, visit LydiaLeClairePhotography.com. You'll be glad you did. For 25 years, Andorra Salon has been making the South Shore feel beautiful. And today, it's also your destination for stylish women's fashion. I know because I wouldn't go anywhere else. Andorra is where I always feel my most beautiful. Discover a curated boutique filled with flattering, easy-to-wear pieces you'll love reaching for again and again. From casual chic to something a little more special, Andorra makes getting dressed feel effortless and fun. And when you're ready to complete the look, their experienced team offers expert hair and makeup services personalized just for you, all in one relaxing, welcoming space. Located at 82 Main Street in Kingston, Andorra delivers an elevated fashion and beauty experience designed to help you feel comfortable, confident, and completely yourself. Visit AndorraSalon.com today. That's AANDORA Salon, and be on your way to a new you. Shop the boutique, refresh your style, love the way you look. You'll be glad you did. We'll be right back.
We'll be right back.